Welcome to Encore. That was David Greeley with the Kankton Two-Step and the Rolling Pin Special. And today on Encore, we are going to be listening to some interviews from CSET's In Your Own Backyard series. That is, it happens every second Tuesday of the month. And I chose the interviews that they recorded in May. And I thought it would be really interesting to listen to today. It's interviews from Dr. Paul Leslie, who is a historian in Nichols at Nichols State, and Terry Fox, who is a former professional baseball player, and Gene Bakke, who is from Scott and was also a professional baseball player. He played here in the States, and he also played in Japan for 13 years. I'm not going to talk too much about them, though, because there will be enough. They will introduce themselves very thoroughly through this hour. And we're going to do a part one today of this type episode with these interviews, because there are a lot of stories that they told in May. And so I'd like to play the rest of them next week. So I hope you'll join me. I hope you enjoy their stories today. And I hope you'll join me next week. So I hope I have some baseball fans out here. Dr. Paul Leslie is going to start the interviews, and then Terry Fox and Gene Bakke, they'll be introduced, and they'll start telling you their stories about how they started playing in the major leagues and how they started playing with the Evangelin League here in Louisiana. I hope you enjoy it.
One of the largest minor league baseball memorabilia collections in the United States. We have a controlled climate vault that includes letters, baseballs. We have numerous uniforms, gloves, bats, jocks, socks. You name it, bats. We've got baseball cards that have been given us to Eddie Lopat, who played down in Generette and played with the Yankees for a while, and Ted Williams could never hit him. we have all sort of items that have been donated to us. And we got started in 1991. A friend of mine by the name of Charles Gaharin, who taught in the English department, and we, for a period of about 10 years, very aggressively covered South Louisiana, trying to get as many items as we could get. We started a reunion, and we had as many as 265 people that came to our reunion. We had the names and addresses of almost every living Evangelin League player who played. It's amazing the things that we came across. We even had one who had stolen the Social Security number of a major leaguer and was trying to get some indemnities based on that. But that's another story. But anyway, what we've done is try to preserve that part of Louisiana history that was very instrumental to the lives of people from 1934 to 1957. As I told them beforehand, I told Jennifer and Terry and Gene that if I do a good job, you'll never know that I'm here. So they're going to be the focus of this discussion, and I'll pipe in. I can give you just a little background to it real quick. There were two Evangelin Leagues. There was one from 34 to 48 and one from 48 to 57. It was a Class D league from 34 through 47. And as a way by way, the reason it went from D to C was because so many players were getting money in little brown paper bags, every week for their salary, that they thought they had to be able to charge more for the ticket prices. So if they went from D to C, they could raise the price from 25 cents a ticket up to 50 cents a ticket. and hopefully be able to pay the salaries. So when it was a D league, it was a rookie league. They could carry two veterans and three what they call near experienced veterans, and then the other seven players would be rookies. And so in the period from 48 through 57, they could carry 15 players, and they could carry more veterans. And so that became one of the reasons why they switched. But during the history of the Evangelism League, nearly 90 to 100 players went up to the major leagues. We have one in the Hall of Fame. Hal Newhouser pitched for a series of months for the Alexander Aces. And quite interestingly, Hal was sent over to the Detroit club in, I think it was Houston. And was it Houston, the Buffaloes, or was...
I'm not sure.
But Houston, and then Virgil Trucks came to Alexandria and took Hal's position. But anyway, so we have between 90 and 100 players who went up, and that includes umpires. There were several umpires who started in the Evangelism League and went up to the major leagues. So it was a major part of life in South Louisiana, and Terry and Gene both contributed to the culture and the social life of the community in South Louisiana by participation in the minor league. So what I want to do is to approach this as I would if I had just met Terry and Gene in their houses about 5 minutes ago, and generally is to ask them both to deal with the question of how did they get interested in baseball. And I think as we go along, if you have any questions of your own, I'm sure they'll be more than happy to answer them. So, Terry, I'll start with Terry. And ask Terry, how did you get started and interested in baseball?
Well, I'm from Chicago originally, and I thought maybe you'd like to have a different outlook as far as a Yankee talking about baseball here. That's why we have Gene here, because he's from Lafayette, and he grew up here, and his scenario might be different.
From Scott.
Excuse me. That's right. See, already you can see the difference. And he's helped me out, because when I was traded from Milwaukee to Detroit in spring training, quick-like, we were there early for early camp, 3 weeks ahead of the regular major leaguers. He was a minor leaguer, and I was just traded. So we spring trained together, but he was one of the first people that I met, and I'm thinking that he's from Louisiana, so he may not be all that bad. See? I didn't know he was from Scott, though. You see, that's what I was worried about.
Then you married your girl from Louisiana.
Yeah, well, that's the only...
That's another story.
Yeah, that was my biggest mistake. See, I met the girl and drank the water, and I'm stuck here. See, I can't... But to say that in Chicago, there was a lot of community teams throughout the Chicago area itself. I was born on the South Side. Moved further south. There's no gun problems where I was from. But in turn, you could play local ball at any age, meaning if you could hit, by all means, they would want you. If you could catch besides that, you were really good. So in turn, I was 15, 16-year-olds, and we're playing against people that are 30, 35, 25, all different ages. But there was a first baseman there that wanted to play professional baseball. And he wanted to go to tryouts. So he asked me to go with him. And just quick like, we went to four tryouts. The first one was for the Milwaukee Braves in Milwaukee at nighttime. Asked to go out there and throw batting practice after you warmed up on the sidelines. So if you're familiar with baseball at all, you'll see that at batting practice, there's batting practice, that they're supposed to hit the ball. So after I was through throwing, we talked to him and asked him what you thought. He said, well, he says, you got good control. You didn't miss too many bats. But in turn, you don't throw hard enough. And I said, well, you said to throw batting practice. So anyway, I didn't get a contract offer there. Went to a tryout with Pittsburgh. I had a contract there for D-ball, $150 a month. Went to the Chicago White Sox, tried out there at Comiskey Park. Offered me a contract for D-ball, $150 a month. Atlanta Crackers, which was AA at that time, owned by Earl Mann. His scout was in Woodstock, Illinois. Went and tried out there. They had a regular game. It wasn't just pitching on the side or throwing batting practice. We did well. He said, we'll offer you a contract for C-ball for $250 a month. I'm saying, well, this is great. I've already, in a month's time, made $100 more in my contract, you see. But I wasn't ready to sign. I wanted to talk to my dad, talk to him a while. The first baseman's with me, never got an offer, but he's telling me, sign, sign, sign. So when I decided to, it was late in the summer, too late to go to it was Thibodeau at that time. And in CERN, they folded, moved to New Iberia, and this is how we became in New Iberia. But the most I made was $300 a month the second year. And to say that I was 9-3 the first year, and I thought I did fairly well, I didn't get a chance to start a game for almost a month. One of the other pitchers got thrown out of the game, and they didn't have anybody else quick-like to put in, so they decided to put me in the game in the second inning, and it turns out that I got the chance to win it, and I became a starter then. But whatever I think is going to be said here as far as what I'm concerned, I just want to let you know that God had a lot of direction for me to be where I'm at right now. Would have been in Thibodeau, it might have been a different story. I might not have met my wife. I might not be living here. But then we got married, went to Atlanta Crackers, making $400 a month. So we were really moving up. And was a starter, got arm problems. And I started to think maybe that wife was doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing, that it caused my arm to go bad. So they sent me to Jacksonville, Florida. Stayed there 2 weeks. Went to Wichita, Topeka, Kansas. Stayed there the rest of the year. And we moved around, but we still were playing baseball. And quick like to say, and it's not a long story, but it's something that how I got to the big leagues. That I was eventually went to three spring trainings with Milwaukee. 58, 59, and 60. At the end of this 59 spring training, they sent me to Sacramento, which was AAA. And I get out there. They said, don't go where they're spring training. Go right to Sacramento. They'll be there in a couple of days. The manager was Bob Elliott that played with Kansas City. He was an outfielder, never managed before, never seen me before. So when I showed up, he was there, and he says, are you right-handed or left-handed? I said, well, I'm a right-handed pitcher. He said, well, we'll put you in the bullpen for a while and see how you do, and we'll try to get you into rotation, starting rotation. As it turns out, I became a relief pitcher. I was 3-1, 5-2, ended up 9-3, and relief pitching was just starting to come into effect at that time, meaning that the big leagues was looking at bringing in pitchers in a short frame, an inning or two. So in turn, the next year I was back in Sacramento again as a relief pitcher, but that's how I got to the big leagues. So I don't know if I would have been a starting pitcher if I would have got to the big leagues. But yet, what got me to Detroit and to get this man in my side was that when I was called up, I met the team on the road, Cincinnati and in Pittsburgh, which was the Braves. The general manager's there. I had to go to his room to sign a contract. And he says, we could pay you at the rate right now, which would be 6,000 because you came up after June. And I'm thinking 6,000, that's not a month. I believe it's referring to the rest of the year, you see, for how many games or weeks you got left. And he says, because you came up after June 1st, you see, it would be 6,000, but we're going to pay you at the minimum, which is 7,000. And his name was John McHale. And I said, well, John, I just want to let you know, I said, that I come from Sacramento. I was making $1,300 a month. I said, I was getting paid more there than what you're going to pay me here. He says, yeah, but you're going to play longer, meaning the season's longer, so you're going to play longer, but play for less money. So you have to understand what sports is about. There's always trying to change your mind somehow. So I said, yeah, you know I'm going to sign the contract, which I did. And in turn, I have to prove to him as well as myself that I could play in the big leagues.
And that was Terry Fox giving a little bio of how he started playing baseball and moving his way up from the minors to the majors. And you are listening to Encore, and today we're listening to interviews from the In Your Own Backyard series from May. This was recorded in May at Vermilionville, and the Center for Cultural and Ecotourism hosts this event every second Tuesday of the month, so I hope you can make it out one day and check it out. I'm never able to go, but I really enjoy listening to these interviews, and it's a great time. They have food often and really interesting topics. They did dancing. They did dancing last month, and I heard it was a great success. Corey Porsche was the main speaker, I think, and I heard he did a great job, and I can't wait to get my hands on that interview. But we're going to continue listening to some interviews after a short little music break. We're going to listen to Cotillon by David Greeley, and then we'll get back to some interviews. And those interviews will be with Terry Fox and Jean Baquet. Thank you.
quick like again at the end of all the scenario stuff. We're in Milwaukee, warming up before the game. He's got me throwing on the sideline, Charlie Dressen. And he says, if you're going to pitch in the big leagues, you're going to have to learn how to throw the screwball. And I said, well, how many pitchers throw the screwball? Warren Spahn does. And I didn't know anybody else on the team that threw a screwball. Of course, Warren was a lot older. And things went on, I'm going to say 4 years later, Charlie Dressen comes to Detroit. And I know that I wasn't long for Detroit because I still wasn't throwing the screwball. And he was going to be the manager. But what got me to Detroit and being able to continue into relief pitching and in the major leagues was that I'm in Pittsburgh pitching, and we got two outs, and Dick Grote, I couldn't think of it earlier, was the shortstop. He was on the DL, just come off. He got a hit up the middle. Well, Dick Stewart was a big first baseman that was in the Texas League for a long time. He hit a whole bunch of home runs out there. But I knew how I could pitch to him and get him out. So in turn, Del Crandall's catcher, it's 2-2 count. And he'd given me the fastball sign. And, of course, I'm saying, no, I better not throw the fastball. I said, now we're going to throw the curveball, which was basically one of my only pitches. So in turn, we struck him out. Bob Sheffing's a coach with Milwaukee. He became the manager in Detroit the next year. And he thought that me shaking Del Crandall off, an all-star catcher, that I must know something about baseball. I knew Dick Stewart, but I didn't know much more than that. He asked for me to be in the trade to Detroit. And then from then on, things became better for me as a relief pitcher at that time. When we went in the game, you stayed in the game on either till they knocked you out or the game was over. One quick thing there that happened, of course, with Roger Maris, he hit his 58th home run off me. And I was talking about that coming over here tonight. And again, we had Dick Brown was the catcher with the Tigers at that time. And he came in the trade from Milwaukee. And I realized that it was his fault that Maris hit the home run. Because I faced him, I was in that game for 4 1/3 innings. And when Maris came up the first time, I shook the catcher off and I threw my good curveball. Well, he only got a triple, you see. So I'm thinking, well, he came up again. And now Dick Brown's putting his sign down. I said, man, if I shake him off, I think I'm going to throw what he wanted. And he hit it out of the park, you see. So that's how Maris hit his home run, and I'm blaming Dick Brown for that. Of course, Maris got more hits off me than most of the other Yankees, but it's just a different life to think about what Major League Baseball is like as to what Minor League Baseball is like. But you meet a lot of good people. Lenny Yoakum played here in the Evangeline League for a couple of years, was a 20-game winner, played with New Iberia. He died Saturday. One of the more prominent baseball people that you'll meet. He was a scout for Pittsburgh. Sat in on the radio there with the Zephyrs in New Orleans every Thursday here for about the last 3, 4, 5 years or so. And you meet a lot of good people. And they're all there because they like the game of baseball. We still try to play some softball. You like the competition. You're there to win. And that's what Gene was doing there. He was in the minor leagues. We got to meet him and other players there. So I'm just going to turn it over then to Gene, if you'd like, and let him talk about what he came in contact with baseball.
You're doing good, keep on. You're doing okay.
Yeah, I know that. But your story is what? Different.
No. The reason I said Scott, we have a lot of good ball players that came out of Scott. And the one in particular that played in the Evangeline League was J.B. Richard. And I have two relatives, Jim Martin and Lee Martin, who played in the with the Evangeline League. I mean, with the Brahma Bulls. And being from Scott, I had a good upbringing from the parents. It wasn't quite like it is today. You had a yes, sir, and a no, sir at the end of everything. And I grew up on the farm, fairly poor, but always plenty to eat and good clothes on your back. My mom was a good seamstress. Went to school for, I guess, the first 5 or 6 years barefooted and always had a pocket knife. Now, if you do that, they want to arrest you. But anyway, I played ball in the first organized team was a little team between the Scott area and the Lafayette area. We were all the country kids you'd call them, and we were called the Centertown Tigers. And the mothers made our little uniforms. I'll never forget a blue uniform with a red stripe on the side. And a guy by the name of Alcee Louvière picked it up and went with it. And our coach was Boo Raggio, one of the finest guys I think I'll ever know. And from then on, I went on into high school, and I knew at the age of about 9 or 10 that I wanted to play pro ball. And I think the baseball that I played and wanted to do so much got me an education. I was fortunate to go to UL, and after my second year there, a good friend of mine who was with the Detroit organization when Jerry was there as well, was Mel Didier, played for Detroit, and he signed me to my first professional contract, and that was in 57. And from 57 to about 58, I thought they would have given up on me. I think in 57, I signed in June. I went to Valdosta in June, Montgomery, Alabama in July, in Orlando, Florida in August. I said, man, they'll never get me back. I said, I didn't win a game. But sure enough, I got a contract the following year, get to spring training. I end up going to C-ball, Idaho Falls, Idaho, the Pioneer League, real good league. And I stayed there all year. Matter of fact, a couple of guys from here, one by the name of Charlie Spell, who had signed with the Dodgers. He was in that league. He was in Twin Falls. And in Jimmy Gore, if you remember Jimmy Gore, he was from Abbeville, but he had signed. He was in Pocatello, Idaho. So we got together one night. We didn't have any crawfish, but we spoke French a little bit for that night. And from there, I ended up playing pro ball for about 7 years. And in 62, I was optioned out to the Pacific Coast League, and I was in Hawaii at the time. Before that, a couple of years before that, I had met a good-looking lady from Richmond, Texas, and didn't know where we were going to get married, so when I broke camp and made it to Hawaii, she flew to Hawaii with her gown in her hand, and we got married. About 2 weeks later, Irv Noren is the manager. He called me in the office. He says, how would you like to go to Knoxville? I said, Knoxville? I thought I'd been there 3 years ago. Well, he said, you know, a lot of guys are coming down from the big league. He says, got to make room. Well, I said, send them guys to the minor league. Send them to him out. I'll stay here. But anyway, I was able to get a release once they said that. And, of course, I couldn't go home. I think I had a $90 plane ticket, and I had a wife now. And I think I had about $700 saved up in my account. I said, I'll never make it. So I was lucky enough to meet a friend while in Hawaii, a guy by the name of, and it's his name is really, that's what he was. He was an angel. His name was Angel Maihara. He died recently, and he had an Inner Island Airflow Express company, as well as a little minor league semi-pro team. So we got together, and he asked me if I wanted to play in Japan. I said, I'd love to. I said, that's really why I got my release. I said, I was able to get it from Jim Campbell. I think you remember Jim Campbell. He was the general manager there, and I had called him, and he said, go ahead, give him his release. Once I got the release and started working on the Japanese deal, I met, like I said, this guy, Angel Maihara, and the wife and I didn't have a, we didn't have anything. We didn't have, and he wanted me to go to lunch with him. So we get to the Colony Surf right there on Waikiki, and I look at the menu and I hit the wife. I said, I hope he's paying. I said, we can't pay for this. Said he knew we were struggling with what we were going to order. So being as good as he was, he said, well, don't y'all get the Chateaubriand for two? Oh, I said, that sounds great. So we ate well, and then for the next few months, I played ball on his semi-pro team and won the championship for him, and then got a shot to go to Japan and play with the Hanshin Tigers of Osaka. And there I really made a pretty good showing. I stayed there from 1962 to 1969.
He was the Ichiban. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
he was the main man.
In the minor leagues, I was in your situation. I made about $150 a month. Then I think when I went to AAA, I was at $700. Right. And when I went to Japan, we had already prearranged this contract, and I got $10,000 bonus with a 2-year contract tax-free at $2,000 a month. So, man, I wrote a telegram to the wife. I said, hey, honey, I said, we're rich. Back up. I said, we're going to Japan. Didn't know the language. Didn't know anybody. It was a little bit difficult at times, but I was fortunate enough to, in 64, had a real good year. I won 29 and lost 9. I won 1 and lost 1 in the series, and in also won what is equivalent here to the Cy Young Award, which is called the Sawamura Award. And the man Sawamura was in the war, in World War II, and, of course, he was killed by the Americans. And being a recipient of that award made me really feel that I had accomplished something, that we were together again, because I had two first cousins that were in World War II fighting against the Japanese, and it was tough for them. And then when I told them I was going to Japan, they couldn't figure out why I wanted to go there. But that was a different era, a different time, and I stayed there till 1969. I ended up with 100 wins and I think 80 losses. You never remember the losses. came back in 69 due to the fact that, we had too many kids also. We had 5, 3 of them born in Japan. They asked me what I did in the off-season. I said, we made kids. Didn't understand the language. Didn't understand TV. So what else is there to do? So anyway, in 69, I have a doggone ruptured disc. Went to feel a ball on my right side and fell like a rag and had a laminectomy done in August. And I figured, my wife being a nurse, she read all the medical books and said, whatever you were doing, don't do it again because that could happen again. So I decided to retire from baseball in 69, came back.
And that was Gene Bakke with his introduction. We heard Terry Fox's earlier. And it's really interesting. I read a book about Japanese baseball and Americans that played Japanese baseball, and apparently it was really tough for them. They would show up and be treated like gods, but as soon as they made one mistake, it was really hard to come back from that mistake, apparently. And so it's impressive that he played that many years in the Japanese baseball circuit. And again, if you're just joining us, this is Encore, and we're listening to interviews from the In Your Own Backyard series, presented every second Tuesday night at Vermilionville by the Center for Cultural and Ecotourism. They have a different topic every month, and they're very interesting. I really enjoy listening to the recordings, and I hope you can all make it out sometime. Go to their website and or just search In Your Own Backyard series, and you can find the schedule. They should be starting a new schedule this quarter. And we are going to listen to another song from David Greeley, and then we'll get back to these interviews with Terry Fox and Gene Bakke. You're going to listen to something called Paul Junius Malvo's Tomb.
One day I was in Boston and had arm problems. Again, it started in 56, and it lasted me till last year. I had my shoulder operated on. Had a bursa problem. But every time I could go here, I could get enough sweat, and I could throw a spitter. So I told the catcher every time that my head was down, you see the button on my head, it was a spitter coming at you. So every pitch that was a fastball was a spitter. After the game, we're leaving the park, and the umpires are right there at the entrance. We were leaving town, going out west. I won the game. I said, man, this is good. The umpire says, well, you finally had to go to it. I said, go to what? He said, you know what I'm talking about. I said, well, you won't see it again. I said, my arm was bothering me. But they can tell by the rotation as how the spin is. That's what everything is today, rotation on sliders, curveballs. If you throw a slider, you'll see a little black dot coming at you. It's the rotation like a bullet. And that dot's right there, and that's a slider. A curveball's a different rotation. Four-seam fastball, two-seam fastballs, a sinker more. All these different things. But today, they're not looking at that so much. They're looking at somebody throwing 100 miles an hour. And they say that they can't throw but right here. It's hard to hit the catcher at times. But baseball was never about size till now, the last 4, 5, 6 years. Pitchers are like Gene. He was a bigger, taller man. He didn't throw 100, though. You see, that was some of our.
I never threw 100.
That's right. But today, that's all they look for. If you don't throw 90 miles an hour, they don't put your name down. If you're not 6'6", they don't even look at you, because they figure you can reach closer to home plate, so you're going to throw harder, that you stride longer. All these things that make pitching different, but it's throwing again, and that's what it's come to, just throwing. I'm going to mention one thing. I talked to my eye doctor yesterday. I have a little DM in my right eye. Shots have helped tremendously. I can see everybody, you see. So if you throw stuff, I can duck. But what I was going to say is that he asked me this question about Roger Maris. It's the first time it's ever been asked to me. He said, did you ever think of walking him? And I thought about that, and I said, you know, if I felt I couldn't get him out, I'm not a pitcher. So that you have to have confidence in what you're doing, just like what everybody has done all their life with their job, or what they're doing now, that you have confidence. But I'm going to ask you all one question to think about. And when you think you got the answer, not these other fellows from New Iberia, because I think they know the answer. Why is it longer from second base to third base than from first base to second base? And if you know that answer, I'll congratulate you. I've only found one other person that knows that answer.
Oh, I'm done. I just reminded me when you were talking about what to throw these guys. You know, I'm pitching. I got set down from A-ball in 59 to Class B-ball in Durham, North Carolina. And the minute I got there, the manager gives me the book and says, you're pitching tomorrow. I said, I just got here. He said, yeah, but you're pitching tomorrow. So here's the book to keep track of what pitches, the curve, you know. And so this guy comes up and he's hitting the ball everywhere. So we've got a left-handed pitching for us by the name of Phil Cleaver. And after the game, I hated to go by and bother him, you know. So I said, well, I'm not going to say anything. So I'm pitching the next night. This guy comes up again. Bam! Base hit. Second time, double. Third time, a home run. Well, I finally learned what I did, just like you. I just walked him the fourth time. And so after the game, I said, who is that guy? He said, he's leading the league. He said, that's Cordell Stremski. He was a good one. And then old Harvey Keene, you remember the year? Harvey Keene would stand, looks like 10 feet from the plate. And when I'm pitching, I said, well, shit, he can't hit the outside fastball. He lunged at it and hit it up against the wall in right center, just as pretty a line drive as you want. But there was just some natural out of some of these guys, and they were just good. I wasn't that good. That's why I went to Japan.
No, but you see, you proved you were good.
Yeah.
Because you did play well. And you did have a career there. That was.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
That's right.
That was the best 13 years of my life.
You see, he talked about Karl Yastrzemski. That was the hardest left-handed batter for me to get out. I can't remember getting him out. Either he got a base hit. I don't know if he ever got on base by an error, but he was always on base.
Yeah.
And it was interesting when he talked about his money that he made a little. No matter what major league ball player or minor league ball player that I played with, I have yet to have anybody tell me what they made as a salary. The most I made in the big leagues was $20,000 one year. That was in 64. 65. They wanted to cut me $1,000 then to sign for the next year to make it 19. I said, yeah, but I did well. He said, yeah, but the team didn't do good. And I'm saying, yeah, but I did good. He said, but we're going to cut you. And they either take it or you go home. But salary, it's a struggle because we didn't have agents. Like I said, went up with Milwaukee. We talked about trying to make the team. I'm traded to Detroit. They offered me $8,000. I asked for $9,000. Hadn't played it with Detroit. So the general manager tells me, he says, you know, he said, they told me you were hard to sign, that you like money. I said, well, that's what we're here for, is to play ball and to make some money. So the next year then, I was 5-2 the first year in relief. They wanted to give me $10,000. I said, no, I wanted $12,000. So it was a struggle every year to get at least a raise. In New Iberia, they paid me $40 for my bus fare to come to New Iberia. I said, well, I'm going to go home after the season. Yeah, but you got paid this summer, right? You should save some money to get home. I said, they didn't pay you any transportation home. No matter what you talk about in sports, it becomes money. But if you don't have an agent, he talked about Jim Campbell, the general manager. I'm coming in to Detroit Stadium. This was, the third year I'm there. And I have a tendency to look at the ground a lot because that's the only place that you can find money. So I'm walking underneath the stadium, and he's walking by, and he says, hey, pick your head up. He says, watch where you're going. And I said, okay, Jim. The other day I'm at Walmart's, and on the side of the aisle there up against the partition, there's an old wrinkled-up bill laying there. It was a dollar bill. And I'm looking at that, and it looked like it could have been an illegal dollar bill. It was wrinkled up so much and everything, and I was straying to pick it up.
You thought Jim Campbell was there.
But I brought it home, and I started to stretch it out, and it kept getting a little bigger and whatnot. So it was the right size. See. But it's just fun to live. If you don't enjoy life, we're going to Pensacola in the morning to play a softball tournament. And we should be playing in the 75 to 80 age bracket. We can't find enough players. Is there anybody in that bracket here that can hit? But we need some players. So we have to play in the 70 age bracket. And if you don't think a few years makes a difference, because with this DM problem I got, sometimes it's a little cloudy and there's no clouds in the sky. You see that you can't see good. But then we have to play some 65 teams. Well, after a while, there's nobody else to play, so it makes it harder to compete. Donald Segura is going to be there with us. We have his sons, his brothers, John Terrell that played with us with Texaco in New Iberia softball. I know this is different than the Evangeline League. We went to St. Louis first trip. U-triple-S-A softball tournament for company people. We didn't win a game. They put us in the loser's bracket, four teams. We still didn't win a game. But we won the beer drinking trophy. And we find out now in our age bracket that we're in, after the first game, we walk to the car, and we have one beer. After the second game, we go back and have two beers. And then, of course, after the third game, you don't count anymore because it don't make any difference. You won't play till tomorrow. See? But it's fun. Believe me, there's nothing finer than sports, no matter what it is, baseball, football, whatever. I learned how to throw a curveball, bouncing it up against the front steps at my house in Chicago. We had a basement, and you had to get steps to go up into the living area. And I had a wash because the front door had a storm door there with glass door windows on it. And if I didn't bounce that ball right to hit the cement and hit the steps and come back, it would bounce up and hit the door. Well, after about the second time, my dad would always open the door. He said, "God, dog it." He says, "Quit hitting the door. You're going to break the window." So you learn to spin the ball. And you learn to spin the ball. And if you do anything, you have to practice. I had trouble covering bunts. Austin, Texas, I'd had the bat boy come out early. He would bunt for 15, 20 minutes. I'd throw batting practice to him then, before the game. I was a starting pitcher then. I learned how to cover bunts. The only person that showed me anything in baseball was the first year here in New Iberia, and you may be able to help me. I don't remember his name, but I got his picture at home. He was an outfielder pitcher, over a 300 hitter, 20-game winner, and couldn't find a job in the Evangeline League in 1954 when I came to New Iberia. And I'm warming up on the sidelines of spring training, just throwing easy. And I had a tendency to bring my front leg up in front of me, straight. I didn't come around. And he's walking by, and he says that if you brought your leg up around, he said you could hide the ball better and you have better control. And I'm thinking, what is he talking about? And he kept walking. Well, later on, I got a picture of him. But I can't remember his name, but he played for a long time in the Evangeline League. I have no idea.
Not Roy Price.
Who?
Roy Price.
No, but Roy sounds familiar.
Roy Price played at home. He was 29 years old, and he worked for the railroad during the day and pitched at night, and he was rookie of the year. He won about. He had about 310 strikeouts.
Yeah, they were. That was it. You had five rookies, five limited service, and five veterans, and two NDS, in 54. So that you always had older people. They were 25, 30 years old. The manager, Billy from New Orleans.
Billy Adams.
Adams. I know he was 35. The catcher, Red Smith, was pushing 40. He had diabetic problem. He'd get on base. If he hit double, he'd have to bring a candy bar out there to him to get some. It was really interesting because they could teach you something. But one of the only things that somebody told me a long time ago was listen to what everybody has to say, but pick out what's going to help you, because somebody's going to say something that's going to be good for you.
And that was Terry Fox, Paul Leslie, Dr. Paul Leslie, and Gene Bakke that was an interview recorded from the In Your Own Backyard series. It was recorded at Vermilionville, second Tuesday of May. And you've been listening to Encore. I hope you've enjoyed these interviews. This is part one. There's a lot more recording left to listen to, and so I'm going to listen to some more of it this week coming up, and we'll listen to the rest of these interviews next week. I hope you can join me for next week with Terry Fox, Gene Bakke, and Dr. Paul Leslie as Terry Fox and Gene Bakke talk about their time with the Evangeline League. And this week we heard more of their bios, it was introductions, and how they got started playing baseball in the minor leagues, and the major leagues. So next week, hopefully we'll hear more about the Evangeline League here that we had in Louisiana. Don't forget, we have the podcasts and playlists on the website. If you did not hear all of this episode of Encore or you'd like to hear it again for more information, you can go to the website, krvs.org, and go to Programs, find Encore, and click on this week's program to listen to it again or hear more. I hope you'll join me next week for a little bit more of these interviews. Have a great rest of the weekend, and stay tuned to KRVS. This is something by David Greeley called Gallop.